Todd Frazier was not a top 10 third baseman in standard leagues last year, even with all of those gaudy stats.
And welcome to episode 117 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and I'm joined, as always, by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. Gentlemen, it's 15 degrees and snowing here in Providence, but Willy Mo Pena is back in Major League Baseball. I'm ready to talk some fantasy baseball. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm good. I could have done without the coating of snow, but I'm good.
And I'm the furthest south. We got some. We're doing the weather updates again. We got some flurries here, but nothing stuck.
Yeah, we got like 5 inches of snow today, so that was not fun. So if you're new to the show for 2017, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. If you're not a subscriber already, now is literally the perfect time to sign up. You can get that extra edge to help you win your league this season. Our fantasy positional series kicked off a few weeks ago. Right now, we're in the middle of third base week. We have 20 in-depth articles, including state of the position, Mike's tiered rankings, which we're going to talk about on this show coming up, along with a bunch of other great content. So you can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Finally, don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes, Stitcher, radio app, whatever you use to listen to the show. So, gentlemen, let's move quickly here through third base. I want to start off with the state of the position overall and sort of your overall strategy as it relates to third base, because you kind of have, when you look at it overall, you have the hashtag big three in the first round. No Manny Machado, who's at shortstop. We'll talk about that. But there's just a ton of depth at the position. So I'll start off with you, Mike, and you can maybe elaborate on the Machado thing. But what's your overall strategy as you look at the position right now and just how deep it is at the moment?
Well, if you're in a draft, it's a nice luxury because you pretty much know, you know, unless you're at the tail end of a 15 team, you're going to get one of these guys if you want them. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, you don't want to go in the top two or three for Brian or Arenado, but anywhere after that you can. Donaldson's a little bit later to me, although it's kind of funny because looking at his ADP, he might actually be a little bit underrated. This is just a great, great position to try to lock in 35 to 40 home runs, a really good batting average, a lot of counting stats, pretty much everything except for steals. You know, there's just not much to say here. It's a great position. And yeah, Machado in most leagues, you're going to want to use him at shortstop, particularly because unless you're in a standard mixer, you know, we'll see as we go through third base, the one-star options at short are a little bit dicier than they are at third base.
Yep. Brett, are you the same way? This is a position in which you want to get your power. I mean, just looking at it last year, third baseman hit 718 home runs, and that was the second most of any position group in the game. So this is definitely a power position right now, correct?
Yeah, it's definitely a power position, and you know the nice thing is that it's a position you don't really have to trade average for to get power to a decent extent, outside of a couple of guys which I'm sure we'll talk about. But man, the top of this position is so good.
Yeah, you have the big three: Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, Josh Donaldson. Mike kind of touched on those briefly, but if you had to pick one of them, I know you mentioned Donaldson, but if you're looking at that first round, who's the guy that stands out to you as the clear-cut choice? I think I know where you're going to go with it, but who do you really stands out as the one you'd want to build around the most, let's say from an auction perspective?
Yeah, it kind of depends where things shake out in your draft or with your pricing, but I mean, I think Bryant is sort of a full half a face higher than Nolan Arenado and Donaldson. And honestly, I have Arenado and Donaldson pretty close together. I mean, in an auction, I might have them maybe a dollar apart. But I think Donaldson's being a little. I'm with Mike. I know Mike put that in the, it put him in the value section of the five star. And I mean, it's hard to, you know, it's kind of laughable to put anybody in the value section of a five star when all three guys are being taken in the first round. But you know, right now Donaldson's going 12th overall, and Bryant and Arenado are both going in the top five. I think that makes sense for Bryant. I think that's a little rich for Arenado, and I think it's light for Donaldson. But I mean, they're all three of them are no doubt top teners, and if you end up with any of them outside of the top 10 picks, you should consider yourself pretty lucky.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of speed from any of the three, but they're elite, you know, top of the scales in terms of the other four categories. It's just absolute monsters. So, Mike, who would you take if you had to pick one? Do you have Bryant at the top of your bid limits for the position right now? Or
I have Bryant. I'm probably a little bit closer than Brett is. I know Brett's close on those two, and that's just because of the course factor for Arenado. But yeah, Bryant to me, he's a special player. That lineup is great. That team is great. And, you know, he stole eight bases last year. And I do think, you know, I'm not suggesting Bryant's going to go out and steal 20, but he has the speed to maybe steal like 12 or, you know, sneak into double digits, whereas I don't see Arenado doing that. So I give Bryant the edge. But again, this is really just we're quibbling about three amazing players, and all three of them in auction formats. You know, this is the five-star tier mixed. You know, mono, you want to go in the 30s for these guys. And if you're in an auction, you know, don't be afraid to push the button and really push these guys up there.
Yeah, just really insane skills when you look at all three of them. So let's move on to the four-star tier. There's five names here, and you could argue that this is one of the better four-star groups of any position in fantasy right now when you look at some of the names here. And I guess I'll start off with Kyle Seager. He's sort of the model of consistency. He's had 650-plus plate appearances five consecutive years. Last year, hit 30 home runs, slight uptick in fly balls, home run to fly ball rate. I kind of see last year as sort of the statistical peak, sort of his ceiling. Brett, do you see it that way as well for Seager, that you know he's more of a 20 to 25-a-year home run guy as opposed to a 30?
Yeah, I don't think expectations should start with a three there, but you know, I think everything else is completely in line with what we can expect. You know, 270 something average, 25 homers, you know, a ton of playing time, you know, close to 100 runs in RBI. You know, it's still a pretty strong lineup. So, you know, I think what you're paying for with Seager is you know, it's something that's that much different than some of the other third base options, but you should feel really confident in what you are getting when you take him.
They added John Segura too, which is awesome for the top of that lineup. And once again, what's the mantra with Safeco?
It's a hitter's park now,
especially for lefties. Power park. Evan Longoria, I mean, he finally put together that transcendent power season we've been waiting for since 2013. Traded a lot of contact for power, but was hitting more fly balls, increased his launch angle. What are your realistic expectations for Evan Longoria, at least power-wise, heading into 2017?
Well, I see a bit of a drop-off. You know, one of the things I want to point out here, and Brett alluded to it with Seager, power was up across the board, so it's less that Longoria or Seager or a lot of these hitters were that much better. It was more a matter of a rising tide lifts all boats. So if Longoria is healthy, if he's on the field, I can see him hitting in the high 20s. I can see him getting to 30. I don't really want to project him getting to 36 again, just because that's a tough number for anybody.
But in this context, everybody's hitting for power. I definitely believe that he can, you know, hit around 30 home runs again and be a pretty solid contributor there.
Brett, Anthony Rendon hit last year 270 with 20 home runs. He finally stayed healthy after 2015's just kind of injury-marred campaign. Double-digit steals as well. How good is Anthony Rendon? Because I feel like he's really, really good, and I want to see him stay healthy every year.
He is really good. Before we talk about Rendon, I just want to jump in and say one thing about Longoria and that power. I think it's worth pointing out. Longoria wasn't like a fluke home run fly ball rate story here. I mean, his career home run to fly ball rate is 15%. His home run to fly ball rate was 15.5% last year. I mean, the biggest difference is that Longoria had the highest fly ball percentage of his career, and that is, you know, that is the sort of process improvement that you can feel a little bit better about him retaining from year to year. So, you know, I actually like Longoria's shot of clearing 30 home runs again. I think it's something he can do. I think it's perfectly reasonable. But on to Rendon. I mean, Rendon has long been one of my favorite hitters. He was an absolutely elite bat in college. He was, he was a high-end prospect, and you know, the injuries really prevented him from making a smooth transition into stardom. But you know, two of the last three seasons now, he's played in 150 plus games. And in each of those seasons, he's hit 20 home runs and scored a whole bunch of runs and drove in some, stolen double digits. I think that there is more here with Rendon as he ages. It's not something that I'm gonna go out of my way to bet on, just because, you know, it's a little bit of a leap, but. You know, I really do believe there is a next level for Rendon, more in the batting average area than in the power area. I don't really see him becoming a 30 homer guy, but one of these years Rendon is going to hit 300, and you just don't know when it's going to be. But he sprays the ball around. He's a real solid hitter. He's got a good approach. It's a good lineup. You know, has all the contextual factors you'd want to invest in him, and you know, I think he's going to be worth putting a little extra juice behind in drafts and auctions this year.
Absolutely, Mike. Adrian Beltre, he's interesting because older hitters. I mean, Beltre may be the outlier to this theory, but how concerned are you about a guy who's going to be 38 this season, but coming off an outstanding year where he hit 300 with 32 home runs, and he's a guy who's hit over 300 the last seven seasons combined, really good player. So how do you balance that risk of Beltre's age with the production that you can pretty much bank at this point?
Well, you probably look at his numbers, and you know, in an auction league, you knock off of like $2 to $3 off of the expected production, and in a draft, you downgrade him a round or two, just because I believe in Beltre. But 37 and up is just a risky age for any hitter, let alone one at a skill position. And we've seen this before. You know, we've seen hitters who look like they're fine and everything's going well, where all of a sudden they just fall off the cliff. Now, for Beltre specifically, he's in great shape. You know, the injuries he's had haven't been, you know, injuries where he's, you know, falling apart, he's getting old or nothing chronic. You know, they've been on the field injuries, but you just always have to kind of exercise some level of caution. But that being said, I wouldn't completely discount him or, you know, cut his price like 50%. You know, I'm just talking about, you know, just a little bit of a discount on him to exercise, I'd say, slight caution.
Yeah, like I think he's a lock for 20 home runs and a 300 average. I just, when you get into paying for a full repeat of last year, I think that's where you can kind of get into trouble with a guy like that.
I agree.
But he's really good. And he's fun. Brett, Justin Turner, he's maybe the most surprising name in this four-star tier. If, you know, just looking back at how much his game's evolved over the last 3 years, really not a lot of weaknesses here. If you look at the batted ball profile, he has a weird reverse platoon split. But other than that, I mean, everything about him is really stellar. And I'm surprised he's going in like the 10th round right now. I know it's early ADP and I hate talking about it, but it just seems like fantasy owners are undervaluing Justin Turner and they're hesitant to buy a full repeat, whereas I think he could easily replicate what he did last year with the 27 home runs and 275 average over a full season.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly the profile of player who fantasy owners tend to underrate and continue to underrate until it's too late. And Turner certainly seems to be fitting the bill this year. You know, I question whether he can eclipse 25 homers this year. I don't think the power is the most sustainable of this entire group. Mm-hmm. But that said, I mean, if it was, he'd be talked about in sort of the Kyle Seager tier because that's essentially what he did last year. I think he's a notch below that, but there's, you know, a guy who I think can realistically hit, you know, 280. I think there's room for him to move the batting average up a little bit like it's been in previous seasons. I think 280 to 290 with, you know, 20 to 25 home runs is totally reasonable for Turner. He is a bit of a value, and I wonder how much of that is because of all of the top heaviness of the position, but you know it's certainly worth having him squarely on your radar.
Yeah, he's gonna bat third for LA too, so that's another big point in his favor. So not only anything, you know, the power and the counting stats, solid average, not a lot of speed, but for the 9th or 10th round, that's great production there. So let's talk about the 3-star tier. This one is heavily populated. There are 8 players there, and I think the most notable name in there is Todd Frazier, because he's a guy going in like the top 50 picks right now, and he's a guy who's consistently been an early round guy, but we have some concerns as a staff. It wasn't just one or two people. I think there were several of us, myself included, who are a little bit concerned about Todd Frazier, that there are some clear warning signs here. Mike, can you summarize basically why we put Frazier in the 3-star tier and what some of those risks might be?
Well, to preface this, when we put these rankings together, I compile them and then the staff offers feedback. And, you know, if one person is down on someone, I'll just leave them unless their argument is really like passionate or like detailed. In Frazier's case, as you pointed out, George, there were multiple objections. I think the biggest objections with him were the swing and miss, you know, high swinging strike profile, not just a high strikeout profile. Also, you know, given his age, given the steals or, you know, for players of his profile aren't necessarily sustainable. I think there was all those concerns kind of made us look at him and go, well, okay, you know, so he's being drafted. I think right now his ADP is still in the top 50.
Right.
You know, as I pointed out, I'm higher on Frazier than a lot of the staff is, but even I would agree, based on that average, you know, based on that risk, that is somewhat aggressive for him. For me, you know, I know Brett, you know, and you can talk to this, Brett. You know, I know Brett dislikes Frazier even more than I do compared to the ADP, but I would agree that a top 50 pick for Frazier, you know, given the position too, given how rich this position is. To take that average hit and to ignore that possibility that, you know, Frazier only hits 30 home runs, you know, and only steals 10 bases with a 220-230 average, you can do better here.
Yeah, I wanted to let Mike go first before we brought in the closer. So, Brett, give me the reasons to be concerned about drafting Frazier, where he's going in 2017.
You know, it's both a game of concerns and a game of just letting our letting our brains convince us that Frazier is better than he is. And I mean that by, you know, we're very accustomed as fantasy owners to seeing a, you know, a hitter who hits 40 home runs and who steals 15 bases as being an elite fantasy player. And sure, he had a low batting average, but even with a low batting average, that should account for pretty extreme production. Todd Frazier was not a top 10 third baseman in standard leagues last year, even with all of those gaudy stats. And yeah, there are some players in there that were mixed eligibility players like Daniel Murphy, but you know, it speaks to a larger point that that Frazier would really have to repeat essentially what he did last year in order to be worth anywhere near where he's going. And I think there's real risk that he won't. I think the steals are always going to be up in the air. I mean, he kind of jumped out of nowhere in 2014 to 20 steals, and he's been in the teens the last 2 years. But you know, he's about to turn 31. You know, banking on double digit steals from him going forward is not a great idea. Were you gonna say something?
No, I just wanted to correct what I said before. He's actually going outside of the top 50, so he's going on average about 73rd overall. But that's still high. But I didn't want to give the impression that, you know, I said within the top 50. That's not where he is right now. And I think part of that is he's already dropping a little bit based on where he was early.
Yeah, and you know, for full disclosure, I mean, I have my initial rankings together for that I put together to start preparing for labor, and you know, I know Mike is a little bit higher on him than I am, but I don't have Frazier in my top 100. I don't mind saying that, because I am about 99.9% sure I will not get him in that league. But you know, I will leave in the mild chance that everyone sees the light and he starts dropping out of the top 100. You know, one of the other things with Frazier, which I really don't like to see in power hitters, are dropping contact rates in the strike zone. You know, you kind of expect to see sluggers expand the zone a little bit as they get older. You know, that's not an uncommon thing, but Frazier dropped, you know, almost over three percentage points in contact rate inside the strike zone. He dropped in contact rate overall as well, which led to the career high strikeout rate. But it wasn't just that he was kind of waving at pitches. He was swinging through pitches he should have hit. And you know, the extreme fly ball approach that he's taking is going to produce more power, and that's great. But you know, I don't think that in this environment of high home run output, it's really gonna make his value shoot up.
Yeah, the risks are just getting really extreme. I mean, striking out a quarter of the time and hitting 50% fly balls, you're not going to hit for any type of a batting average. So it's an all power, and then banking on double-digit steals at 32. Like, that's a ton of risk. When you look at some of the other guys in this tier, I mean, just look at, like, Jake Lamb. Mike Moustakas is another guy. Alex Bregman, Michael Franco, Nick Castellanos. Those are all guys who are going to hit probably 20-plus home runs this year. Like, you're not getting a ton when you buy Todd Frazier. I'm with you guys on him.
I guess before we leave this, I would just say, you know, the reason I'm at the top of this tier, compared to a lot of those guys you mentioned, George, mm-hmm. You know, to Brett's point, you know, and you know, I know Brett is not the kind of guy, and neither am I, that you know is so against the player. You know, Frazier falls to a certain point, you can't overlook what he can do in the counting stats. You know, and even if that is only 30 home runs and only 10 steals, that's still, you know, it's still some pretty solid production past a certain point.
Yeah, I mean, because we've seen it before, I understand the reasons for expecting him to do similar to what he's done in the past, but once again, that's paying for past performance, not future value. So I'm with you a little bit on that point. Like, that makes sense, but like Brett said, I don't think if you're low on Frazier, you're not going to be the guy who values him the most in your draft. It's just not going to happen. So,
well, I agree with that. You're either in or somebody's out. Somebody's going to have that power and speed and assume more of the same and draft him around where his ADP is now, or at the very least, like, you know, between 70 and 80. And, you know, if you don't believe in him, you're not going to get him.
Yeah. Brett, there's a lot of other names in this tier. We're not going to probably get to all of them, but give me the guy that you think is the most interesting for fantasy owners to go after for the season.
I think I'd laugh because I think Mike knows who I'm going to pick here. I'm going to take Ulias Gurriel. I think he is going late, and I think he's going to continue to go late. But we're talking about the best hitter from Cuba of this generation. That includes Yoenis Cespedes. That includes Jose Abreu. Now Gurriel is already in his 30s and is just now going to be adjusting to major league pitching. So, you know, it might not play out how it should have played out if he had come over when he was the age of either of those two other guys. But you know, Gurriel is an extreme contact hitter. He doesn't strike out. I believe in his last season in Cuba, he had 48 walks and 3 strikeouts. Now, there are a lot of, you know, stats to be had in Cuba, and you know, that's not really indicative of much, but it's indicative of an approach. And you know, Gurriel, I think, can find his way into hitting 300. I think with the short porch there, I think he could challenge for 20 home runs. He doesn't have, you know, enormous power, but he's also athletic enough to steal a couple bases. So I think there is a lot to like there. And you know, I think that there's, you know, at least a reasonable chance that he could do something similar to, you know, sort of a baseline Adrian Beltre season, not Adrian Beltre from 2016, but sort of a more of a baseline in the, you know, power in the low 20s, but high batting average, high RBI total season.
You don't have to sell me on Gurriel. I like him a lot too for this year. And I think considering where he's going to go, because he didn't have a monster debut when he did come up last year, I think you're going to be able to get him pretty cheap this year. Mike, who's the guy for you in this tier that you like more than maybe the consensus, or that, you know, you circle on your sheet going into a draft?
Well, more than the consensus is Mike Moustakas, who was my pick. But I want to talk a little bit, you know, even though I think he's ranked appropriately, I want to talk a little bit about Jose Ramirez.
Yes.
I feel like he's a guy people are going to look at and, you know, say he's a fluke, that he's got a slip. But I think it was Alex, right? Right, guys? Alex Chamberlain, who made the case for him in the picks this week?
He did, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was a really good case, and it's not that I was anti-Ramirez, but it kind of solidified me on him and made me want to push him up a little bit on my rankings. I believe in the skills, you know, great contact hitter. I do believe that average is going to drop, but this is some of the point that Alex made, which is, you know, if Ramirez drops, you're still looking at 8 to 10 home runs, you're still looking at 20 steals, you're still looking at a 280, 290 average. And that's going to come in a really good lineup, which means lots of runs batted in, very good player in real life. You know, we kind of talked about Frazier being overrated. You know, Ramirez, you know, again, not so much with the ADP, because he's being drafted just inside the top 100. So that ADP is appropriate. But some people are going to look at him in some leagues and go, yeah, you know, I don't believe in him, or I don't want to pay for those steals or that average. You're just getting a player in Ramirez who close to a 5 category guy just outside of the home runs. And the speed, you know, we'll talk about this more as we go on in the series. That speed is underrated. You know, getting 20 steals from any position is big.
Yeah, like at a fundamental level, making contact is the most important skill a batter can have. He struck out only 11% of the time last year. So he's a guy who's hitting a ton of line drives. And the one interesting stat, which I wrote in the state of the position for Ramirez, was last year he was one of five hitters with a 300 average, 10-plus home runs, and 20 steals. The other guys were Altuve, Betts, Trout, Trey Turner, and Segura. So he's in pretty elite company. And even if, like you talked about, Mike, you know, and Alex talked about in his piece, even if he comes back to the field a little bit in terms of average or power, you know, those steals are enough to make him a pretty valuable option at third. The guy I'll take, and I just want to mention him briefly because we haven't yet, is Alex Bregman. I really, you know, we talked a lot about Houston's lineup. It's going to be really good this year, especially if Gurriel does what Brett envisions. You know, Bregman's going to hit second there. He started his major league career just really atrocious. It was like a 2-for-38 stretch. But even when he was struggling, you know, he was still hitting the ball hard, wasn't striking out a ton. So after that rough stretch, he hit .311 the rest of the season. So I think he's a guy who added a lot of power in the minor leagues, and we talked about this a lot last year, but he's got the potential to challenge for 20 home runs. He can run a little bit, and I think the batting average is going to be decent. And I really like him from a counting stats perspective and runs and RBIs. He's going to bat second in that Astros lineup. But do you guys like Bregman as well? Because I feel like he's getting valued pretty fairly in drafts. He's not getting run up into the fourth or fifth round or anything like that. I think he's a decent kind of speculative upside guy in the middle rounds for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the question with Bregman is I think just how much power he's going to have. I think he was sort of always billed as sort of a teens power guy, and that built as he was in the minors. If he's a 20 plus power guy, I think there's a lot of potential for him to return profit. I think the batting average is going to throw some people off because of that aforementioned super cold streak to start. But
it was absurd.
But he was hitting the ball really hard. It was just really strange.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty good bet to at 290 in that range. So. But yeah, the batting average is going to be there. The power clicks. He's going to be a nice value.
Who else? Is there anybody else in this tier that you guys want to discuss? Or I don't like Michael Franco is interesting. I'm trying to see if we got any Twitter questions on anybody. But is there anyone else that's interesting here? Or
I mean, there's a few names, but really. Between the articles and what we've done in the series, we've kind of covered just about everybody.
Yeah, we got one question from Christopher Austin. He wants to know if Moustakas can follow up that 2015 breakout this year. Is there any more ceiling for Moustakas? And Mike, you profiled him as the value in this tier. So do you envision Moustakas kind of building off what he did before he got hurt last year when he tore the ACL in May?
Not really building off of it. My proposition on him is that the power is legitimate. And, you know, if you look at him over his last 162 games, you know, granted, he's not going to play 162 games. But if you look at him over the course of a calendar year, you know, when you take that injury out, you know, he's like a 27 home run guy. And that's kind of the proposition is that I don't think he'll get better. But the injury sort of masks what he is, which is a guy who can hit 25 home runs, you know, hit 260, 270. I don't see him improving much off of that, but I don't see him losing that either.
All right, let's move to the two-star tier. There are nine players here, speaking of depth at the position, but a lot of these guys are more relevant in only leagues than mixed leagues. But Brett, I'll start with you. Who is the most interesting? I mean, I think it's Miguel Sano, but who to you stands out in this tier?
It's clearly Miguel Sano. I mean, there was a really interesting back and forth among the staff about whether he should be sort of the leader of the two star tier or in the three star tier. I think I'm probably more optimistic on Sano than most of the staff, but I think there's certainly risk, and a lot of the same arguments you can make against Todd Frazier, you can make against Miguel Sano, and, you know, Sano won't even steal some bases to boot. But the thing about Sano is that I don't think he's resigned to being a, you know, mid 30% strikeout rate guy. He never struck out at a 30% clip in the minors. His strikeout rates got better as he spent more time in levels. He adjusts reasonably well. You know, last year he only got 116 games in. It was kind of a weird season because they were going to play him in the outfield, and then they were like, oh wait, he's Miguel Sano, he can't play the outfield. And it just kind of put the season on a poor note. And he is exactly the kind of player that can carry a huge BABIP because he makes such extreme contact when he does. But I think there's a lot of room for upside. There's just, you know, clearly room for downside as well. So it's a risky pick.
Yeah, I think the positional change is a legitimate thing that it does mess with guys. And I talked with Mike Berardino, who covers the Twins for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and in the preseason for the Effectively Wild team previews, and he talked about it. Like, Sano is not a great fit in the outfield. Like, he was struggling in spring training there. And when you're focusing on that area of your game, you're focusing less on at the plate and everything else. So I think there is some validity to that point. Mike, who in this tier do you like?
Let me ask you a question about Sano
real quickly. Do you think we're expecting him to maybe finish above the 2-star tier, but which is more likely, that he finishes as a 3-star guy or a 4-star guy this year if he really maxes out?
I'd say a 3-star. I do agree with Brett. And, you know, again, I initially had Sano as a 3-star, and it was the staff discussion that led me to put him at the top of the 2-star. The 4-star, because of that average, which I do agree with Brett, is he could hit higher than .236, but I don't see him, you know, hitting, you know, .280 or .290, and I don't see the speed. You know, it just makes it tough to envision him as a 4-star. He'd really have to break out this year and hit, you know, 40, 45 home runs. Could he do that? I mean, he has the talent to do it. It's just not a bet I'd make.
Yeah.
The guy in this tier, there's a couple guys in this tier, but I'm going to go with the guy we have at the bottom of the tier, and Hernan Perez, who honestly, kind of fluky in some ways, but it's really difficult to look at those numbers and what he did, and particularly in the short time span that he did it, and not at the very least be intrigued. Now, you know, again, you know, we're talking about deeper or mono leagues. I like a player like Perez as a late pick in a deeper mixed or a reserve pick in a standard mix, and you just kind of look at him like, well, if he's a fluke, it's a reserve pick or it's a back end pick, it's no big deal. But if he does even some of that, you know, you're looking at a player who, you know, even if he doesn't hit for power again, he just had so much speed and he brought so much to the table. It's kind of difficult to ignore that, you know. And again, just speed is such an important thing to have in a fantasy league. You know, the danger with him, of course, is and I mentioned this in the piece, the Brewers lineup is really stacked. And, you know, Brett, you were just talking about switching positions. It's even tougher than switching positions is kind of taking on that super utility role as a young player. It's not something you can just kind of ease into. So that's where I'd be concerned with him.
Yep, Perez was one of 14 guys last year with 30-plus steals. So you want to get guys like this late in your draft.
And he did a lot of that in the second half too. You know, he just, you know, suddenly just kind of picked, like, at one point he wasn't even ownable really, or his borderline in NL only, and then all of a sudden he just was, you know, he went gangbusters.
Yeah, that lineup's interesting. I don't think Travis Shaw's an everyday player. I really don't. I think he's more of a platoon guy. So I think there is gonna be an opportunity at third for him to at least get at bats against right-handed pitching there, or excuse me, against lefties at least. I want to ask you, Mike, about Ryan Healy, because we got a question on Twitter from Greg Ficini. He wants to know what Ryan Healy's upside is. I mean, I see him as sort of like a power-only kind of guy. I don't really buy the batting average from him, but what do you see as Ryan Healy's upside for 2017?
Yeah, I agree with that. I see 20 upside is probably 25 home runs with a 270 average. I don't buy the batting average either. On the other hand, I do believe he's a legitimate player. I don't see him as a complete fluke. Some of what he did last year, to me at least, was legitimate. So, yeah, that's a ceiling for me. I wouldn't pay for that average, but assuming he plays, and he and Trevor Plouffe both look like they will play. So yeah, if he's starting, that's realistic.
Yeah,
at least I should say that's just the high end for him in terms of realistic.
Right, like that 25 home runs sounds great, but there are literally 100 other guys in fantasy baseball who are going to hit 20 plus home runs. So it's like,
yeah,
there's limited upside
there. Well,
that's
why he's in the two star tier.
Right. Okay. Mike, let's talk about Jung Ho Kang real quick. How do you even approach this situation? Because there's a chance he might be suspended. We don't really know about his off-the-field legal issues, how those are going to resolve themselves. So how would you be approaching him in terms of bidding on him this year in an auction?
Very carefully. We've seen this situation. You know, we don't like to comment on domestic violence and what have you, but this is even more complicated because it was a DUI in another country, and apparently or allegedly, you know, we want to be careful here with this because the legal situation was a hit and run. So I don't really know. You know, I remarked this to, I think it was Rob Silver who had asked about this on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're a Korean legal expert, it's really difficult to guess what's going to happen or if he'll even be, you know, permitted a work visa to come into the country. So in terms of talent and what he can do, you know, he's a three-star guy and he's one of the stronger three-star guys. I just don't like the idea of paying. You know, we kind of saw this with Jose Reyes last year. There were a lot of people, and I was in this group too, where I was like, yeah, Jose Reyes will be fine. You know, he'll be suspended for, you know, 50 games and the Rockies will let him come back and he'll start and he'll play, you know, 100 games. You know, we saw what happened. You know, Reyes was cut and then he had to, you know, go back to extend his spring training. And then he was a part-timer at first with the Mets. So we just don't really know. You know, we don't really know what's going to happen with Gong. And I don't want to bet too aggressively on a player that I might get half a season out of.
Yeah, Gong's also a guy who's had some injury problems in his two seasons in the States. So I think already you're expecting him to miss time. But if he's forced to miss, you know, guaranteed to miss time with a suspension or anything like that, I think that only hurts his at-bats even more. What would you project for play? I know we don't like to speculate, but what would you reasonably project for him at this point,
in terms of
like
games played,
just played appearances? Would you go like over under like 300? I mean,
yeah, 300 was the number I was thinking. So I if I had to take a number, I'd guess the under.
All right, that's fair. I think you want to be risk averse in these situations because we don't know what's gonna happen.
No.
Anybody else in this tier? I mean, like Jerickson Profar stands out because he's Jerickson Profar.
We need Brett to talk about that one.
Is Brett back yet? No. All right. Well, all we have left is the one-star value picks. So, is there literally anybody else you want to talk about here? Like Martin
in the two-star tier?
Like Martin Prado in an NL only is good.
Yeah, and in an NL only is really good because you can bank on that average and those runs batted in. And in a mix, it's like, eh. You know, you want the, you know, unless you're talking about a 230 hitter, you want that power in the slot. And the one star is really limited. So if we're doing our value pick, we're going to have to like either fight over these guys or go off the board.
Well, I mean, you know who I'm going with. I know who Brett's going with too. Do you want me to spoil it? I know who he's going
yeah,
with.
Yeah, sure.
He's going to go with Sandoval. I know it.
Yeah, you know, Brett and Ben Carsley and there was somebody else. You know, everybody's kind of fascinated with Sandoval. You know, what I'll say about Sandoval.
He looks good.
Well, he does. But what I'll point out, there's a couple things about Sandoval, which is there was one year with the Giants where he didn't look this good, but he was in pretty good shape, and he came in, and people were excited. Mm. And it didn't do anything for his production. Like, it didn't make him a better hitter. You know, it just kept him on the field more.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the other point about Sandoval, which is he's a hitter who he had one year with the Giants where he had a bunch of home runs, but otherwise – kind of a 15-20 home run guy with a decent batting average. And now, granted, in the current power context, maybe that translates, and in Fenway, maybe that translates to 25 home runs. But I think people are looking at him and thinking, wow, you know, he's going to go off the charts.
Oh, no.
He could. What I see is more if the Red Sox get 120 decent games out of him with the rest of that lineup, they'll probably be happy. But for fantasy, is there a bargain at this price? Yeah, but it's, I don't think it's as high as some people think.
Like, I don't think you can. I'm not expecting him to be like a superstar or anything like that. The upside is like really limited. Like, the ceiling is not that high. It's you know, 20 right. home run cap power. He's gonna hit for a decent batting average, and if the counting stats are there, like, that's not a bad play given where he's going in a draft.
Well, he's fine.
Yeah, in like a deeper mixed league, if he's like my corner infield guy or a bench guy, like, he's going to play every day. Like, you're going to be able to use him at times, I think.
No, and he has more upside, you know, than a lot of the guys who, like, you know, Chase Headley, Adonis Garcia. There's a number of players below this line that weren't, right, you know, in the top 30 that I you know, if you're they're guaranteed to play every day, I'd rather have Sandoval. I agree.
Brett is back. Brett, we just wrapped up the two-star tier, so we're moving on to the one-star tier. We just had a brief Pablo Sandoval discussion because we knew
it wasn't that brief.
Well, we know you're gonna pick him, so you get to lead off the one-star tier. Tell us about Pablo. Good. Tell us about Panda. He looks great. He looks fantastic on Twitter. Like, all these photos, it's amazing.
He does. He looks very svelte. I am going to. I'm gonna take Pablo Sandoval. I think that, you know, I think there's at least probably a 25 to 35% chance that he's just done as a fantasy player. But, you know, he is really not that far removed from being a very productive third baseman. And, you know, I think the whole weight thing is really overblown, even though he does look awfully good in pictures now. You know, he was a really good hitter when he was quite round, and you know, he historically has been worse when he's been skinnier, but, you know, if it's a matter of keeping himself healthy and keeping himself engaged a little bit more, then I'm all for that. But, you know, I think there is a reasonable chance at a little bit of a renaissance here with a return in batting average, maybe 15 homers or so. But I'd probably rather chance it on Sandoval than grab one of these other guys, whether it's because of playing time concerns or just age.
Mike, who are you taking for your one star value pick?
I'll stick with who I went in within the article and just talk a little bit about Jose Reyes. You know, so Reyes in half a season last year, you know, came close to 10 home runs. He came close to 10 steals. He's also behind David Wright, who I have absolutely no faith. You know, we're talking about Sandoval maybe never being a force again. You could probably put a higher percentage on David Wright given all his injuries, which is kind of sad because, you know, he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory for a while. You know, Reyes himself has an injury profile, but, you know, whether it's as a super utility guy or as a primary third baseman, there's a legitimate chance here, you know, at 10 home runs, 15 steals, an average that won't kill you. And, you know, that kind of production at this level is really useful. And, you know, he's in a lineup. You know, you look at the Mets lineup, there's some injury questions there overall, but it's a surprisingly good lineup and one of the better lineups they've run out there in a few years. So, yeah, it's Reyes for me, particularly in this tier.
So if you listen to Flags Fly Forever at all over the last 2 years that I've been on this show, and is that I like Danny Valencia a lot more than I should. I just think he's a fascinating player. I've given up the hope now. He's going to be 32 this year. I've kind of given up the hope that he can be an everyday guy, not because I don't think he has the talent to do it. I think he does. I just think teams are now not going to be willing to give him that chance anymore. It's clear in Seattle that they're going to platoon him with Vogelbach at first base. That's the plan. They beefed up their outfield. Well, I shouldn't say. They actually did the opposite. They slimmed down their outfield. They added some defenders out there for once, with guys like Dyson, Haniger, Gamel. So Valencia is going to platoon at first base. And unless Dan Vogelbach's not hitting at all, which I think he will hit, he's not going to get everyday at-bats there for them. So the one thing we know Danny Valencia can do is hit lefties. Last year, hit .318 with a .535 slugging percentage, 7 home runs and 150 plate appearances off southpaws. So if he can do some version of that, I think he's the perfect guy to go get in a league where you can do daily lineup changes, or if you know there's a week where they're going to face like 3 or 4 southpaw starters, you can definitely use a guy like Danny Valencia. I think he has legitimate value. There's obviously a cap to the ceiling based on playing time, in terms of what he can produce for you, but this is a guy at the end of the draft. He's going outside the top 300 in terms of ADP right now, I believe. So you can get him in a 15-team league past the 20th round. This is the perfect kind of guy I want on my bench. There's no superstar ceiling, but we've talked about it a lot. Just getting solid production that you can bank, and Valencia is that kind of guy. I want to own that. So, once again, Danny Valencia, I've jumped on the train. Mike, am I crazy to like Danny Valencia this much?
No, you sold me on Valencia somewhat last year. And, you know, Vogelbach certainly isn't automatic to, right, you know, to produce or stay in the majors. No, Vogelbach will be fine. But it could be a situation where it's not even a strict platoon and Valencia plays a little bit against right-handers. That was the other thing about Valencia. You know, prior to last year, prior to the adjustment he made heading into last year that we talked about on the show a year ago, mm-hmm, he couldn't hit righties. He was a lefty masher who should be on the bench. He was acceptable or average last year against right-handers. And that's the thing I kind of like about him, is if there's an injury or if Vogelbach doesn't produce, he could be a sneaky 400-450 at-bat guy. And we know he can hit for power. And, you know, Brett mentioned this earlier, you know, Safeco is not the graveyard for hitters that it once was.
Yeah, I mean, Valencia last year got 500 plate appearances. I mean, so it wasn't like he didn't play. He had 17 home runs, but things did not end well in Oakland. I think there's a pretty well-documented incident there. And there's a reason, you know, maybe that he's played for so many teams. You know, he's not a guy, I think, at this age that you're going to give an everyday opportunity to. It's very rare to see a guy in their early 30s just blossom into an everyday guy. It's really rare, but I think if, like you said, the opportunity arises, Valencia's a guy who can hit righties a little bit. He's not strictly a lefty masher guy. I think if the opportunity were there, he'd be able to somewhat take advantage of that. So, all right, that's going to do it for our third base preview. This was a lot of fun. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the show. We're back. Thank you for listening to episode 117 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. You can subscribe today to Baseball Prospectus with a premium membership to read all of us. We're in the middle of our positional preview series right now. Third base week is going on. Tons of content up there right now at baseballprospectus.com. I advise you to go check it out. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get exclusive access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question anytime. We'll get back to you within 12 hours, usually much faster than that. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Brett is at BrettSayerBP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I'm at George Bissell. Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. We love all the new reviews that have come in, the ratings. Really appreciate that. They make us feel good inside. So thank you, everybody, for listening. For Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, it's George Bissell saying thanks. And until our next show, so long, everybody.
See you next week.